So it is the season, and I do like to say that whatever our faith of origin in the United States, we all are in some size, shape, or form also informed by Christianity. And to honor the season, I thought, well, why don't I look at the Sermon on the Mount and give a Buddhist commentary? So it's not exactly what I'm going to do, but I did draw something from the Sermon on the Mount that I will then talk about from both a Buddhist and therapeutic perspective. I think that can be helpful to all of us. And it's the passage that says, "Judge not that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me take that speck out of your eye,' when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye." So clearly there is a suggestion that judgment of others is not the best way to go. The matching verse that I like from the Buddhist tradition is by a very, very early, about 8th or 9th century, Indian who was in Tibet, and his name is Vimalamitra, and it goes like this: "When we see fault in another's behavior, we certainly have an issue in our own mind. We should consider our own issue and then come to know pure appearances." And so there's a lot in that, but in brief, just to paraphrase it, we see something in someone else's behavior that we wish to criticize, and it clearly ultimately relates to some issue we have in our own mind. And it really behooves us to consider our own issue. And then he uses a very, very profound phrase. He says, "We will come to know pure appearances." So in 11 minutes, I'm going to share with you 60 years of therapeutic Buddhist and spiritual wisdom, because Anne's going to talk for a bit as well. You know, I work with couples, and probably the biggest giveaway that we're going to be on problematic territory when couples speak with one another is the minute they go into you talk. You, da 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 da. And the you is typically associated with a judgment. So at its worst, you're irresponsible. You didn't do the dishes last night. I mean, a classic kind of conversation in a couple. You're irresponsible. You said you would do the dishes and you went to sleep without doing the dishes. So there's a blame and there's a shame and there's a immediate defensiveness from the partner. And typically we get off to the races. And we all know what that's like. I mean, anyone who can look back at their own behavior in their own relationship knows that the minute they start judging their partner, it's going to be difficult. So when we see the fault in another behavior, so that's you are irresponsible, you certainly have an issue in your own mind. So I don't know exactly what a traditional Tibetan Buddhist teacher would say to their student. Maybe they would say, "You don't have enough patience. You should be understanding and compassionate to your partner, and you should understand that they have issues, and you should be compassionate, and you should be patient." The something that modern psychotherapy can add to this in terms of, and what Buddhism can add to this, is what the Buddhist piece that can be very, very helpful for us is that we, through the practice of attention that we cultivate here on Sunday mornings, our capacity for reflection increases and expands. And to the extent that you have a reflective space in your mind, you are going to be in better shape psychologically and spiritually. So this reflective space is what we are really cultivating when we cultivate mindfulness, when we cultivate attention, when we're observing the breathing, the practice that we do. What we're developing is the capacity to reflect on ourselves, to be with ourselves, to reflect not only on the breathing, but to notice that, you know, thoughts are coming and going, or feelings are coming and going. that reflective space has many qualities to it, including mindfulness, awareness, patience, compassion. In terms of using that reflective space with some emotional intelligence, when we've said something like, you're irresponsible, you didn't do the dishes last night, you're an irresponsible person. And I can guarantee that anytime you go into a character assassination of your partner, you're going to be in a hellstorm. The psychological thing that we can do with the reflective space that we develop here in our mindfulness practices is we can ask ourselves, you know, what's going on for me when my partner doesn't do the dishes? What am I actually experiencing? And many of us just may get stuck on, well, they're just irresponsible. I mean, what's going on with me is they're irresponsible. Well, that's judgment and that's about them. But, you know, if we really touch into it, you know, do we feel unloved? Do we feel disrespected? Do we feel anger? Do we feel not seen? Do we feel like my world is going to fall apart if there are dishes in the sink at 11:30 at night? If we're honest with ourselves, some people feel like that. If I leave dishes in the sink overnight, my world is shaken. Okay, so we're honest with ourselves. My world feels shaken because there are dishes in the sink at 11:30 at night. Or I feel unloved. My wife left dishes in the sink and I feel unloved. I feel disrespected. I feel shame. Whatever it is, the ability to kind of have a sweet spot where we are both having a reaction, but also a reflective space within that reaction can occur. And let me just sort of pause. Why is that a sweet spot? Because there are two extremes. One is where our reaction is so great that we can't really have any reflection. And the other is that we zoom in with so much sort of like pushing away our emotional experience that we're actually kind of trying to suppress it or push it out of our awareness. So the sweet spot is we have this reflective space and we also feel, yeah, I'm touching into the fact that I feel unloved. My dishes weren't done at 11:30 at night by my partner, or I feel disrespected. And, you know, then we use the skills of attention that we have cultivated, and we just sense into what does that feel like in our mind and our body? In that reflective space, in that precious spiritual awareness that allows us to be present to our experience. And all of our emotions and all of our human experience is by its very nature impermanent. It's in a way the simplest and most profound aspect of Buddhist teachings is that everything is impermanent. If we can allow the actual experience to occur, it's like a wave. It arises and it ceases. If we don't start adding to the narrative of, well, yeah, 3 weeks ago, my partner also didn't do the dishes. And then 3.5 years ago, I remember when they didn't do the dishes. And, you know, they're just so unreliable. And I mean, this may sound like an exaggeration, but some people keep track. And, you know, even three events of somebody not doing the dishes is like the world is coming to an end. But if you don't get into that narrative construction and the story building, but you actually just observe mind and body, what is going on in my mind, but you don't fuel it. Well, I've got the story going about the dishes and what's going on in my body. I'm feeling this tremulousness and this sort of pit in my stomach is sort of really painful. And what's the sort of the soft backstory to this? I feel unloved and disrespected, unseen, unappreciated. And just, we observe the feelings in that reflective space that we've developed spiritually. Comes and it goes. And as I say, I'm not entirely sure what Vimalamitra meant when he was writing about pure appearances, but if you can allow your mind and body experiences to arise and cease in a very, very spacious, reflective space, which is aware and compassionate and considerate of self. It comes and it goes, and it's what's left is ultimately a spaciousness and a kind of delicate sweetness that you've survived an emotional tsunami. You've seen it come and go, and you have some delicate state of mind that's present for yourself and is, of course, accessible in your relationship as well. And that, I think, is at least one meaning to the verse, when we see fault in another's behavior, you certainly have an issue in your own mind. Consider your own issue and come to know pure appearances.
So Harvey's brought us already to pure appearances. And really, it's been a little journey. Perhaps you experience yourself starting to talk about the tumultuousness of reactivity involving judgment, and then the ability to allow the space to give the possibility of that reactivity resolving, really. It doesn't mean you don't have a conversation about the dishes, but that's different from reactivity. It's different from accusation. It's different from the kind of attack judgment mode that Harvey was describing. And in many traditions, and certainly in our tradition, there's a very strong sense that if the waves just kind of roll out, there is something naturally present that is spacious, that sweet spot Harvey is talking about. Reality, Buddha nature, true mind, there's something deeper there available to us that we are actually precluding our experience of by getting involved in this reactivity. And we all do it. It's called life. But we can develop a larger perspective. And that larger perspective includes the cultivation then of, so this judgment, as Harvey has described it, is a real pushing away of the person. You're bad, you're wrong, and by implication, I'm not, and I know better. And that, of course, creates a distance, a separation. In this more spacious situation, which is also more relaxed, relaxation is really significant. It's something that we always cultivate as part of our practice, as we will do in a few minutes. So out of this is available to us a sense of a kind of great-heartedness, because the whole essential fact about your partner or anyone is not that they didn't do the dishes. They have a larger compass. They are a being, a human being. They suffer. They don't want to suffer. They want to be happy, just like you. And this is a much really deeper and more universal way of connecting with someone and with ourselves. We too. Why are we so upset about these dishes? Well, because I want to be happy. I want to feel right. I want to feel comfortable. I want to feel loved. I want to feel respected. I want to feel that there's a certain order in my life. Whatever the case may be, it comes out of a more, whatever the specific issue is, as I name it, it comes out of a deeper, broader, more powerful sense of wanting to be at peace, and I would say of wanting to be in love, in the largest sense, in love, feeling, offering, receiving, all of that. And this is the heart of really all great traditions, certainly the heart of the Mahayana Buddhist tradition, and I would say the heart of all good-heartedness, whether it is encapsulated in a particular religious tradition or not. The vital truth of everyone, not just humans either, everyone wanting happiness, not wanting suffering, and having a certain right to that, that this is a principle that we can stand for, that everyone should have the space for what they need to do in their lives. Come back to that in a moment. So I chose a quote from Jimmy Lingba, 18th century Tibet, also very treasured still to this day. And reflecting on how the reactivity of judgment robs us really of ease, relaxation, the goodness and spaciousness of our own hearts, and also the power of our own being. This reactivity, as Harvey is describing it, is also, don't you think, a position of a certain kind of feeling of helplessness or powerlessness. It's like, if I don't yell and tell you that you're wrong for not doing the dishes, who knows? Maybe you'll never do them again. And maybe I won't either. And then we'll live in a house filled, like my college days, just several feet of dirty dishes that nobody wanted to get close to. There's usually some kind of, look closely behind anger, usually there's fear, which is even more unpleasant to experience. So what about the courage of compassion? This is what Jigme Lingba says. Now we're imagining a state where our reactivity is quieted down. We feel a kind of spaciousness. We can allow those big waves. Those big waves just show us how vast our ocean is. They'll ebb. In that context, Jigme Lingba says, compassion is a powerful state of mind, an inability to tolerate the fact that others suffer. It's a powerful state of mind. Reactivity is not powerful. It's automatic. We've become a kind of a machine, a robot. As we say, you push my buttons. Something pushes our button and we just react. But we're human beings. We're not just buttonized. We have some, internal wherewithal, and that's really what we are seeking to discover as we practice, as we do the practice that we'll do starting at 11. Compassion is a powerful state of mind. This is also one reason from at least Buddhist perspectives, and maybe Christian as well, that, it is more blessed to give than to receive. We have often heard, and I remember, as a child, feeling, no, I don't think so. I want those presents stacked up. My presents. But that's okay. That's a honest, childish and honest way of looking at things. So it's been, a kind of con, and maybe for you also. Why? We're blessed, but we're so happy when people give us things. Giving, though, compassion, if you look into it, at a little deeper level, isn't it an expression of a surfeit, in a way, an abundance that you have in your being that you can share with somebody else? You can give. You can give a smile. You can give a gift. You can give patience. It means that you have a capacity. In that moment, at least, you're not just gimme, 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 which is not such a powerful place. It's a not just childish, we all do it. But, if you think about, when do you feel more spacious? When you receive, when you give. Now, you might feel spacious when you receive, and I would ask you to reflect whether that spaciousness comes because you've received, or whether that spaciousness comes because you have a capacity to respond with great love and thanks. And that's also a giving back on your part, and that is empowering. Interesting things to look at, particularly this season, but really in all seasons. So he says, compassion is a powerful state of mind. And perhaps the lesson, so to speak, for today is our interest in looking at the difference between the state of reactivity and judgment that Harvey is describing, the way that letting it go can lead to this spacious sweet spot, and the contrast between that reactive state and this compassion as a powerful state of mind. an inability to tolerate the fact that others suffer. Now, this seems in many traditions and humanistic traditions, religious traditions, caring about others' suffering is different, I would like to suggest, from the kind of judgmental reactivity that we were looking at earlier. It's a principled position. It's written into our Constitution in a way. All beings should have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Right there in the Constitution, those guys, whatever their faults, recognize that, yeah, somehow the impetus to happiness, real happiness, distinct from pleasure, but that's another Sunday talk, right? Real happiness has to do also with certain kinds of principles. A principle that imposing suffering on others is simply not correct. It's not something I want to stand for. It's not something I want to allow. It's a principle. It's a principle. I will stand by that, and I will stand on it. Could lead to reactivity, of course, but I'm standing on it with this big, courageous heart of compassion, and I'm saying, no, this is not right. Such and such is not right. And he goes on. So compassion is a powerful state of mind. I think that's a wonderful koan, so I'm reading it several times. An inability to tolerate the fact that others suffer. Joy is to delight in others' pleasures and success. So when we see happiness, we can take joy. That's also an open-hearted sweet spot. To cultivate the wish that all have happiness, it is a joy one feels when they achieve it for themselves and is the wish that they should never be deprived of it. So this open space, which is a release from button-pushed reactivity, and this courageous heart, which is offering good wishes, a wish for freedom from pain for all beings, including yourself, by the way, very importantly. All of this can flow further when we are relaxed and present. And that's what we aspire to in our Sunday practice. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this teaching, please visit our website, donmountain.org, to subscribe to this course and find other great Dharma offerings. May all beings always have happiness and its causes. May all beings always be free of pain and its causes.